Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda. I'm in back home, actually, in Southern California, and I have my co-host Margaret Sheldon on the line. I'm going to say good afternoon to you because it is afternoon there. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. I'm feeling like spring may actually be on its way. The news here in Boston leads off with the Red Sox suddenly now, and I saw that when I woke up this morning.
Well, it's opening
day
today.
Oh, good. Yes,
yeah.
But you know, it just hasn't felt like it. I can still see snow up against the corners of my fence. Yeah, it's been a long winter here, so
I know
it's all
it
good. We're happy.
Good for you.
I see all these plein air painters are posting gorgeous pictures, you know, down south of being outside and their gardens have started. And I think, oh, it just seems like paradise to me. What must that be like? But then
do you want to hear a really crazy thing about my garden? I still have tomatoes growing from last year. There are still tomatoes on the vines. Only one plant out of about 20. But isn't that crazy?
That is one hardy plant.
I know, tomatoes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like strawberries or things that last, you know. But yeah, tomatoes. Crazy, crazy.
Now, I know we're not a garden show, but I want to ask, when you live in California, when do you put in your garden for this summer? Like, when will you add?
Like next week, probably.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
Yeah, April.
Good to
for
know.
Sure. For sure, because it's a changing concept. I mean, you have kind of the spring summer crop, and then you have a fall crop, you know, where you plant pumpkins and you plant some more squash and things like that. So it does kind of go. But tomatoes here grow apparently year round. but I will plant them in April and probably get them through October or November. So.
Wow.
It's very fun. But I just have to replenish my beds and my flower beds and vegetable beds and do a lot. So it's all good.
Yeah. It is.
So anyway, when Margaret and I were talking about a show topic, I said, you know, we should probably do a show about the topic that we get asked about the most. And that is pricing your art. Now, we've done a couple shows on AHA, and we are going to revisit some things. But I do have to tell you, and Margaret, I know you agree, this is a hot topic and something that artists face all the time.
All the time, yes. I was telling Leslie, I recently took a class that was business for artists. And let me tell you, there was a few nights when I went home scratching my head thinking, do people really think this way? Because it's so, you know, if you're going to be good at business, Leslie, you're more naturally inclined to analyze things and think about, you know, the numbers and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I am not. So it really was sort of a mind bend for me, but I think it's an important thing and maybe something we'll talk about in the weeks to come. But sure enough, I think it was maybe the third class, someone finally said, look, I really want to talk about how to price your art high enough so you're being paid for your effort and your talent and what you offer, and not so high that no one will buy it. And forget it, there went an hour of our class because everyone was sort of struggling with the same thing. So here we are.
Well, I think Margaret and I both agree that we all want to be artists that are selling. We don't want to be artists that are painting, storing, and not selling. So in order to do that, you do really have to do your homework. And when I first started painting, and I had no clue on what to price my art at because I didn't think it was worth much, I looked around, and I tried to find artists who were similar to me and who were selling their art. Don't find an artist who's similar to you who's not selling because maybe there's, you know. But the biggest problem is this. I believe the biggest problem about pricing is not the price. It's the fact that people aren't selling your art. So even if you think your price, you know, that your prices are pretty good and you're not selling your art, don't always look at your prices as if that's the problem. There's a very good chance it's just that people aren't seeing it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, and you have to be able to say, okay, these prices are pretty good, but maybe that's not the issue. Because when people look back and they have this huge inventory, they're like, oh, I got to do a sale. I have to slash my prices. And I think sometimes that's a little premature because that's not the real problem. So keep that kind of in the back of your mind, because you really have to address the fact that pricing needs to be good, but that may not be the problem while you're not selling. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it's two-way thing.
I know. And a lot of times it's not. Yeah. And then there's all the, and we're going to get into this, the fallacies of, well, if it's priced too low, people won't think it's worth anything, which is, there's truth to that. And if it's priced high, maybe they'll be more intrigued. And it's just crazy. But what you really need to do is do your homework about pricing. And the first thing you want to do, which is what I did, is compare your art to other artists. And you have to take into consideration, when you're comparing yourself to other artists, what their visibility is, what their experience is, what their sales experience is. But you can easily get on the internet and visit other artists' websites and daily painting sites and blogs and whatnot. I mean, you know, go on Instagram and just kind of do get some education. And if you're listening to the show and you're like, well, I already have my prices. Well, you know, sometimes you need to readjust your prices. And I think it's really important to have that not be this fixed thing that never changes, and not also be something that's an emotional change where you raise prices because you love one painting, or you lower prices because you're not selling. It does need to be more of kind of a systematic decision. So regardless of where you are in your pricing, I think this information is going to be important.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially with the part when you said be consistent and don't price one higher because you like it. You know, from personal experience, I've seen people take to the painting that I thought would never sell. And I think, really? That one? But the one to the left is so much better. Doesn't matter. What they love, they love. And you cannot guess. In fact, I'm sure you'll guess wrong. So be consistent. Be consistent. The second point that we have, and boy, in my business class, we talked about this a lot, and that is to really identify your audience. In other words, you need to think about, and sometimes you can do this even when you're creating a painting, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but you need to look at the hard facts. You know, there are analytics available. If you have a website, you can easily see who is looking at your art. You can look through your records and think about, who have you actually sold a piece to? You know, are the people that sort of collect your art particularly well educated in art? Are they really engrossed in the art world, or are they just drawn to the subject matter? I think another thing to think about, you know, you really need to work up in your mind who your buyer, your collector is. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be comparison shopping? You know, your prices are, oh, I can buy a picture of, you know, boats in the basin over here for $200 and you want $2,000. Let me, you know, are they going to go back and forth? But also think about, you know, the affordability factor. So and that has to do with where you're selling as well as what you're selling. But think about who your audience is. Maybe you don't bring your most expensive paintings to an art fair where, you know, it's going to be sort of, you know, maybe a lot of college students or young professionals, or, you know, just sort of really, really think about who's going to be buying the piece. Mm-hmm. And I think an intangible in all of this is really, how competitive is your marketplace? So that's going to tell you a lot about what you need to do with your prices. And here's a small example. I'm going to be doing a collective open studio in a week or so. And you know, one of the things you have to make a decision about when you're bringing your art into a situation like this is how much do you want to make money? And by that, I mean, are you willing to sell cards, you know, other collaterals, prints? Is it just your original artwork?
Right.
I checked because I knew I was going to be bringing, I have a lot of these beautiful cards I've printed, and I had to make sure that I didn't undercut everyone else in the space. And I also didn't want to be, you know, $10 higher and have no one buy my cards. So
right.
You did need to do a little bit of good old-fashioned sort of market research, not only who your buyer is. I can't say enough about identifying your buyer. I think that accounts for 50% of the sale. If you've figured out who it is ahead of time, you're more likely to sort of present to them what it is they came looking for. And then beyond that, you just really, this is a game of research. And I think the more data you can collect, whether that's from maybe you just visit an art fair yourself before you go to one or an open studio event, take your notebook with you, jot down the sizes and the prices.
Right.
You know, there's nothing like hard numbers to help you figure out where your work should fall.
You are so right. And you know, Margaret, you mentioned competition. Knowing who your competition is not a bad thing. It's not negative. It's just information. And having that information is going to help you understand what you're up against. And I really want to even bring this out as a separate point, that it's really important to understand that. And I know you're thinking, here I am in my studio. I sell online. I don't even know who my competition is. But let me tell you how you find it. try to Google something that finds your art. So, if I wanted to find my art, I would Google how to art, you know, like palette knife boat paintings. I would probably Google. Who else comes up when you Google that? Look at those people.
Right.
See, you know, visit their websites. Are they selling? Look at the sizes of their paintings. What are they priced at? This is who your competition is. And it's not like you're, you know, if you're selling in a gallery, great. And that's easy because you can walk around the gallery and see who, you know, what other paintings are up for sale. But if you're like most artists who aren't in a gallery and are selling online, you need to be smart and figure out how you can find your own art online. And when you do, who else pops up right alongside you? Because that's who your competition is. That's what their prices are. And, you know, let's say you sell at art shows all the time. Well, hello, I'm sure when you're at an art show, you do take a break so you can walk around, see what other people are selling, see what their prices are. And that's just kind of doing a competitive study. It's not negative. It's positive because it helps you understand kind of where the marketplace is. Does that make sense?
And, you know, isn't it amazing when you think of how easy this is today in, you know, 2019? I mean, you can literally pour yourself a cup of tea, sit down with a laptop or an iPad, and you can get all of this information. Like, it used to be
in your jammies.
Hard, physically. In your jammies. I love it. With your dog on your lap. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, gosh, the information it's sitting right there, and it's so easy to come by. So that's a good point, Leslie. Thank you.
Got it.
Let's talk a little bit about your price changing. We at my, I know I'm going to talk about my business class too much, but there was one painter who was there who really, she was the one that really needed to talk about prices too much.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about strategies and I know, Leslie, you and I have discussed this. If you have had your prices, let's say, I'm just going to pull numbers here, at $250, $500, and $1,000, so three different size paintings, that's what you price them at. You're going to get to a point where it's time to raise your price. Or maybe, you know, once a year you're going to offer a discount. Be smart about that. Don't do it at the same time every year because your buyers will watch for that. There's no
Yeah, you're educating them not to buy until they're on sale.
Right. You're telling them wait till June 1st. She's going to have a studio sale. I think you really have to. This is the part where you have to stop being an artist and start being, you know, an accountant, and you're looking at your books. You've got to be smart. Don't make it predictable. I think the only one that needs to know when your prices are going to change is you. And there's more to that. It's also, let's say you've got a big following or a healthy following on Instagram. Well, one way to keep people checking back is because they never know when you're going to offer a giveaway or, you know, 15% off or free shipping or whatever it is. I think
right.
you kind of have to make yourself more interesting in that way. And, you know, if it works, you kind of get a more active following. And the other
yeah.
thing is you can have your pricing bend to your needs. If you find yourself with a studio that's running out of storage room, go ahead, feel free to have an off schedule sale because that's the right time to do it for you. So
yeah,
I think.
And the other thing is
spontaneity. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention that is something to think about is you don't necessarily have to have a sale with the price of your paintings. You can do a buy one, get the other one for half. You can do buy a painting, get the framing for free. There's a lot of ways to offer a great value to your customers in the form of a sale, but not by lowering your prices, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a great idea, especially if you're trying to make
yeah.
room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and then you don't have to worry about people getting upset that you lowered your prices and they just bought a painting from you 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? You can just say, oh, I just don't offer the framing kind of thing. But anyway.
There you go.
Okay. The last point under kind of this doing your history beforehand is just stay educated. Don't get too caught up in your own world and forget to look with what's happening out there. Because you need to know what other artists are creating. You need to know how things are being priced. You need to know how people are marketing their art. I mean, that is so important and so huge. The better prepared you are to know that information, the better you're going to be as a business person. And you're going to be smarter about your pricing, about how you do it, and don't
mm-hmm.
don't lose touch with what's going on. Because I think a lot of us get content in our studios. We paint, we price, and we don't realize that there's things happening out there that we can learn from. That's all.
It's
just
true.
Saying. Okay, so let's get down to the how you should price your art. There's a lot of different techniques, and they're out there, and there is not one that's necessarily better than the other. But I think it's really important for we're going to kind of go through a lot of these. The first thing we're going to talk about is for new artists, artists who are new to the market, because that's a little bit different for people who are not new. Because let's say you're painting and you're like, okay, people want to buy my art. I have no idea what to price it. Well, the first thing you should do is just base it on comparables. Compare your art to what sells, not to what doesn't sell. We kind of mentioned this already. Set your price similar
mm-hmm.
to other artists with similar experiences, similar, you know, work and similar mediums. And just, you have to kind of just pick something. But
mm-hmm.
that's the first way you can do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. The second thing you can do is think like a retailer. You know, price your art like it's two or three times the cost of materials. And I had my eyes opened to the fact that you should keep, I know none of us do, but you should keep sort of a tally of how much time you're spending on a painting. That helps in a lot of different ways, actually. But your time is valuable and it is worth something. You can decide what that is. Maybe it's, you know, $20 an hour, $30 an hour, whatever it is you, I mean, go low if you want to. It's your painting. But think that there is a way to figure out how much you've got into it. Now, if you're a really slow painter and you've got a little 6x6 and it's taken you 4 hours, for God's sake, especially if you're new, don't try to get $250 for it unless you're pretty darn sure somebody's going to jump at it. But I think that if you at least can figure out what it has cost you.
You're saying my exact topic. You skipped over to me. Let me just add one thing.
I'm sorry.
No, so the first one is to compare. The second one, with Margaret said, is to do it like retail. Take your cost of materials and just triple it. Don't worry
yeah.
about your hourly rate. The third thing to do is to do your cost of materials plus your hourly rate times the number of hours. And so if you want to make $50 an hour, $100 an hour, whatever it is, calculate what it costs you and then determine it that way. So you're getting paid a decent rate.
Yeah.
Nothing is worse than putting a painting out there that took you 20 hours to paint and it's priced at $250, and you're like, yeah, I didn't make minimum wage on that one.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
Yeah, but and granted, when you're first starting out, it's hard, and that's the point we're trying to make here. There's no, you know, if you're still learning and people want to buy your art, great, but you may have to make minimum wage to start out because you're still learning. But there will come a time where you will paint faster. You'll get better if you're not already. I mean, I hate to even say that, you'll get better, but you know what I mean, more efficient, I think is a better way of looking at it.
Yeah.
So, and so it's the hardest thing in the beginning when you're first starting out is to get paid what you think you're worth without pricing yourself out of the market. So these are just kind of some of the ways you can do it quickly without never being able to come up with the price because it's too intimidating or mind-boggling or hard.
Yeah.
So I think it makes a difference. But what about people who have a sale history? Because there's a lot of things that come in play to that. Things like pricing your work based on accomplishments, sales history, and exhibition history. You know, art sales are not immune to the ups and downs of general economy, and you have to make adjustments. But if you are an award-winning artist, if you've had various shows or exhibitions, of course your art should be priced higher. And don't forget that. It's really important not to forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to assume that will happen to all good artists.
Eventually,
you know, success just takes over.
The last factor that I want to mention for both of these, sometimes you have to charge what people will pay. And, you know, let's say you're doing a local art show and somebody comes up and asks you how much and you say $500 and they say, okay, great, I'll buy it. Now, that person may be like a, you know, self-made millionaire, who knows, but you know how it is when you sell something and if they say yes right away, you think, probably should have priced it higher. Or if 20 people, if 20 people come up to you and you tell them the price and they all walk away, there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm just curious. Well, would you pay for this piece of art? You got to be careful because you don't want people to be rude. But you can say, hey, I'm just starting out. I'm just starting out, and I'm kind of trying to figure out my pricing. And you know, it doesn't mean you have to sell it to them for whatever the price is, but at least have a conversation. So,
you know, I want to toss in one thing here, which was that especially if you're at sort of anytime you have the public coming through, people will make you an offer. If you say that the painting is $500, you have to be prepared for the person who is being a pretty savvy buyer and says, well, would you take $400? And you think to yourself, wait a minute, I have a price on there, and it's fine to stick to your price. But I've got to tell you, if you're on the second day of an open studio or a sale and you haven't moved anything and you really want to, it's okay to sort of haggle a little. Just don't be surprised when it happens. Think ahead of time how you'll handle that, because I guarantee it happens. And it's like, darn, do I really have to do this? But sometimes to go home with, you know, a positive number in your checking account is a good thing. So it's just something to be aware of. It does happen, and you got to know what you're up to.
Yeah.
So we did some research, and by we, I mean Leslie, and about.com had a great explanation. It's called 7 Ways to Price a Painting Depending on Your Personality. And I just think that is so perfect.
I know.
We added a few to this list. You know, getting a painting to the stage where you're really happy with it is, it's hard, right? It's not easy to do. But let me tell you, putting a price on it can be even harder.
Yep.
To underprice yourself, it just means sometimes you're going to make your art look worthless. And you know what? You'll end up losing money where you thought you were going to be making some. So that's a risk. Overpricing yourself, you run the risk of never selling anything. So I think these tips are meant to help you decide how to approach how you're going to go about pricing. And this will depend a little on your personality, your experience, and certainly where you are, at what stage you are of your art career. I mean, all of those are really important factors. So take it away, Leslie.
Okay, the first one is really popular, and it's a simple approach, and the price is determined by the size of the painting. So it doesn't matter whether you as the artist like it a lot or hate it. It doesn't matter if one took 2 hours or 20 hours. Those things, the subject, nothing matters. You just decided that if it's a 8x10, 11x14, 48x48, this is the price. Now, you set your price by size. It's very simple. It is something that I think when it comes to a commission, you absolutely need to add a premium because commissions are 10,000 times harder.
Yeah.
And everyone knows that. Not that the price should be 10,000 times higher, but that would be the difference. Really simple. It's how I've always priced my art. And commissions are a totally different story, but it is just based on size. And it's simple, straightforward, and safe.
Yeah,
and
it's
easier when you've been painting for a longer period of time, so the factors aren't so dramatic when you compare two similar size paintings. That one of them is way better, one of them took way longer. You know, as you've been painting more, you're a little more consistent, and it's easier. But it's something that's very popular. A lot of people use that format.
Yeah. And then if you're caught off guard, you can always quickly do the math, and you know what your price is. You're never going, wow, better to have a price established. So
yeah.
I love that. Personally, I love that one. The second one is the accountant's approach, which is to recover your costs. So this is very much what I've spent the last few weeks talking about in this class. What it means is that you decide on a percentage profit you want to make, the fellow who taught this class would say you need to make, to cover your costs. And what you do is you add up the cost of everything that went into making a painting. You then put a certain percentage on top of it, and you've got your selling price. You know, the cost calculation can be really basic, materials and labor, or you can decide to kind of be really serious about this and have a comprehensive view where you think about not only the materials and the labor, but what does your studio space cost? What do you pay for lighting? I was introduced to the concept of a thorough budget where you actually figured out the cost of the equipment that you use,
right.
You know, your iPhone, I mean, everything. But the point is that every painting has a different price, and it would be based upon what went into creating it. Now, if you're just starting out and maybe you've never sold anything or very little except to your family, pricing your work based on time, labor, and the cost of materials is often a good way to go.
Yeah.
You know, you just need to be really smart about this. You set a sensible hourly wage. And of course, you know, the cost of materials, that takes some time. And I know artists don't like to be wasting their time doing math, but if you know you're going through tubes of paint, a few orders, you know, to the supply store, and you're going to realize that it takes a few paintings to cover all of that material. And I just think you need to sort of proportion it to a painting and make that your asking price. If materials are $50 and it's taken you 20 hours to, you know, create that piece, maybe decide at minimum wage, you know, it's $15 an hour now, not too shabby. You could price that painting at $350. I think it's important not to forget the comparables. You don't want to be in a room of $200 paintings with yours at $350 unless you're really confident that it's worth that money. And you have to be okay with taking it home unsold.
Right.
I think you always want your final asking price to be in line with what other artists with sort of a similar credentials as yours? What are they charging for their work? Just make sure you're not too far afield. Just to go back to that hourly wage business, I know it's really tough. If you created a masterpiece, it could take you 20 hours. It could take you 200 hours. I think, you know, you have to acknowledge that if you were being paid maybe $10 an hour for every hour you spent on a piece, you know, what does that calculate out to be? Make sure it kind of makes sense to you at the end. You know, the creative process is pretty, I don't know, inefficient. I think if we thought about all the money we put into a painting, we'd probably be shocked. But, you know, that also includes, I mean, think of all the time you spend sort of setting up your reference photo or cropping or, you know, sort of packing up your car and driving off to wherever it is you painted it. You know, there's a lot of sort of, I don't know, soft time, you know,
sure.
Just even setting up your color palette, for goodness sake, you know, all of that. And that's before you're varnishing it, framing it, if you frame it. And then, you know, heaven forbid someone buys it, you're going to have to deal with shipping and handling. No one's saying this is easy, but if you're going to have an accountant's mindset, you're going to be thinking about all of that. And I have to say, although it goes contrary to an artist's nature to be an accountant, the best-selling artists I know either pay attention to that part of the work or they end up hiring someone to do it for them because, you know, you can't give it away.
Yeah. Interesting. It's a lot of work, and maybe it's something you get to, but it's certainly a way that you can do your pricing. Another way you can do it is called the capitalist approach, which is basically pricing your paintings based on the market. And you just do your research. You visit galleries. You visit studios. Figure out, you know, what similar types of art is selling for, and use those prices. Now, one of the things I should mention in all of these pricing methods is if you want to ever sell through a gallery, you need to make sure that your prices, you're comfortable with the fact that if you sell through a gallery, you're going to make half of what you're used to selling. So don't ever think down the road that when you sell a painting, you're going to be able to double the cost and the gallery is going to sell it. You know, you can't undercut the gallery's prices. So I just wanted to make that mention. However, when you're first starting out, it's probably pretty unlikely you'll be selling in a gallery right away. So it's okay to kind of start at a price point and work your prices up. But once you do sell in a gallery, you absolutely have to match their retail prices and not undercut them.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
I always, you know, when people sort of look confused by that, I always think, well, you know, think about it from the gallery's point of view. They're storing your work. They're talking about your work. They're hanging
Absolutely.
Your work. You shouldn't undercut them. That's just not nice. So.
It's just not smart business, and it's unethical. So
there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Number four. Our fourth suggestion is for those of you who have a very mathematical mind. It's similar to the first one, where maybe you have three sizes of paintings and you've already decided what each one of those will sell for. In this case, we're going to say you can calculate the price by the area of the painting. This, I feel like, Leslie, I feel like you wrote this one for me, because I'm the person who says I should come up with three sizes of canvas that I'm going to use, and then I could pre-buy a whole stack of frames and pop them in and be done with it. This would be so smart. But no, I go for the odd sizes all the time. I don't know why. You know, I'll go for a 48 by 52 just because. And the way you can handle that is you can decide on a price for a square inch, or if you're metric, centimeter, and multiply the area out. You know, if it's 50 by 50, I'm trying to pick an easy one, 0, 0, that's 2,500 square inches, and you can use a calculator. Believe me, I would have to use a calculator. If it doesn't end in a zero, I'm helpless. But here's the thing, you know your prices ahead of time. I'm going to give you a tip. On the back of your stretchers, whether you've stretched it yourself or you've purchased it, write the size of the painting. You know, if one edge is 40 inches, write that right on that bar. And if the horizontal is, I don't know, 30, 3, write it on that mm-hmm. bar, because I can't to this day, and I'm pretty good at this, I can't look at my paintings and with absolute certainty tell you what size they are. I still end up checking because, you know,
Margaret, why don't
do
you buy standard sized? Why don't you buy standard sized frames? I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Just because
I mean
standard
sized canvases.
Spirit moves me. Yeah, because you see, because Leslie, sometimes I stretch my own, and it can just be a matter of it's total whim. I have no justification for this other than it's what I, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm using up a lot of stock that I've had for more years than I'm going to tell you, but I love stretching. So I will often stretch an odd size, which is great as long as you're willing to sell it unframed or pay to have it framed, because you're not going to buy that one, you know, prefabbed kind of thing. But at any rate, the point is, write the size of the canvas on the stretcher bars, and it's a pretty easy calculation then. I mean, we all have calculators on our phone. If you know what you're charging for a square inch, you can just bang it out. Don't undercut yourself. I guess we have to keep saying that. If mm-hmm. the square, you know, pricing by area doesn't give you the right price, I think you need to rethink this approach. You want to make sure that you don't charge so little that you don't break even. And, you know, a gallery is going to take 50%. Now, this is something that it's a whole nother topic for another day, whether or not you can live with it. I discovered this year I could, in fact, live with that because it was worth it to me. I just love the fact that all I had to do was sip a glass of champagne. The sale took care of itself. So
absolutely.
Everyone can determine that. That's beyond mathematics. Now we're talking about, I don't know, personality and how much are you willing to pay for Eve. But, yeah.
So true. Okay, wait. I just lost my place. I dropped my paper. What number are we on?
You're at number 5, the collector's approach.
There it is. Okay. The collector's approach is increasing your prices every year. Some people who buy art do it for investment purposes. They like the art, but they also do it because they want to be able to resell it. And they believe in the value of the painting they have of yours is increasing. So kind of understand what the rate of inflation is. Be sure to increase your prices annually by at least this much or more. And it's something that I think a lot of us could have, should have done many years ago, and we would probably be comfortably at a higher price. So don't forget that. You have to remember why collectors buy art, and they do it because of the increase in value. But if they buy a painting from you and it's the same price 10 years later, it's not necessarily a good investment. Just saying.
Right. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is a fun one. This is the creative director approach. Sell a story, not just a painting. I just want you to know, I'm not going to tell my tale, but this is 100% true and valid. And sometimes it can make all the difference in whether a painting sells or doesn't. You need to have a good tale to tell with every painting. And if you're smart, you're going to hint at it in the title. And what that does is it creates, I don't know, you sort of, it's as if you're selling a little bit of your creativity and not just a product. I mean, there's more to it. You know, you can write or print it out on a little card to go with the painting to its new home. You know, that's mm-hmm. sort of sweet. Always, mm-hmm. always have your contact information on it. I think, you know, your price can be in the small print, but some people don't list their prices when they're, you know, using social media at all. But I'm just telling you that, without a doubt, I've seen titles, I swear a title can sell a painting.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you know, everybody wants to buy a place that reminds them of either some place they've been and loved or some place they've always wanted to go. And you would be amazed how people will take on a place if they feel like it has any kind of a creative connection to them. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that will sell.
There's the totally disregard for everything approach called the instinctive approach, where you suck a price out of your thumb. Okay, it's not really a long-term approach. It's more of the, hey, you painted palette knife paintings and now you're painting abstract paintings. And it's a totally different medium for you and totally different from your usual style. So let's just pick something, which it does happen with a lot of artists. They start painting watercolor, or they go from watercolor to oil, or they add pastels, or they go to pottery. I mean, you know, a lot of artists do make that change. And so you kind of sometimes have to say, well, let's just try this. Yeah. And it's kind of out there, but the whole thing about the show that is just hysterical is so much of it has to be done on gut feel. You know what I mean? There's all these scientific ways.
100%.
And part of me says I would do all of these and then see kind of if it ends up being kind of consistent or if it's just really wacky.
Because
there's no right or wrong answer.
Unless it doesn't fail.
Then, you know. That's probably means they're wrong.
Well, you can also, you know, don't underestimate the value of asking other artists, or even better, if you have a director or someone at an art association, they hang shows all the time. They will tell you where the market is and where yours fits. You don't have to follow their advice, but it's kind of nice to be able to get some professional advice. Anyway,
yeah,
I love number 8. This is this is my favorite. I wish I could afford to live like this. Maybe this is how I price. It's called "Don't Worry, Be Happy" pricing. Finally, this means after you've done all that math and you realize you probably spent far too much time and used, you know, the very best materials in your artwork, you can't ever target a reasonable sales price. Then it's time to just ask yourself, how much money would it take for me to happily say goodbye to this piece of art and send it off to a good home?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when all else fails, deep in your gut, you do know that number. What would it take for me to be happy? So
yeah, I love
I think
that.
Maybe that's where you should start, yeah.
It's really important.
Start
because
there and then see if the rest match.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's really important. And you, the last thing I'm going to mention in this kind of category is to be sensible, because you do have to look at your collection of paintings and have your art priced for similar works of art to similar prices. And what this means is you can't equate a dollar value with the psychological factors that go into how much you like a painting or don't. So if you paint, if you've got a 30 by 30 painting and you're like, oh, I hate it. And so you're like, okay, I'm going to sell it for $1,000. But then if you have a 30 by 30 painting that you love and you're going to sell it for $2,500, you are sending a message that a painting, now here's the problem. Most people assume that paintings that are similar sizes took the same amount of effort. Now, as an artist, we know it doesn't work that way, but it's one of the costs of doing business, I'm sad to say. So if you're going to send a message that this one is worth 2.5 times more than this one, then they're going to want to know why. And so you have to be careful. I mean, you really do. And it's tough. It's really hard because sometimes you have those paintings that you really like and you really want to, you know, charge more. And you can't, here's the thing. You can. There's no one that's out there saying that you can't. And if the painting is that good, what the heck? Do it. Don't do it on all of your paintings, but do it on one.
What the heck?
And so, but you might want to explain. I would say if someone says, how come this one is so much more? I would say, I like it that much that I would never let it leave my studio unless it sold for that price. It's not a negative to the other ones. It's you're just saying how much you love this painting. You know, and the key, of course, is just understanding if you're selling or you're not. Number one, it's probably how many people are seeing it. But number two, you got to look at your prices. And sometimes we all need a reality check. And I would think in most cases the reality check is you should charge more. But I could be wrong. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Let's talk about raising prices. Let's talk about raising prices. It is not a bad thing. It is a really good thing. I mean, you can raise your prices anytime you want when you think it's appropriate. And a lot of it comes down to how you do it. But I just want to say, you don't want to be one of those artists who's changing her prices every other month. That's not what you want to do. Or who makes too big of a deal about, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm raising my prices. Raising prices is a good thing. So let's talk about kind of some ways to consider raising your prices. So the first one is get comfortable with why you're doing it. And some examples would be, you know, my sales for the year were so amazing, it's time to raise my prices. I'm raising my prices for the first time in 3 years. You know, my audience, my collector's base has grown so much that I realize it's time to raise my prices. And don't do it for false reasons, but don't feel like you can't do it. I mean, don't lie and say that, you know. Don't lie and say you've had an amazing year if you haven't, because that maybe is a sign that you shouldn't raise your prices. But you just have to get comfortable with it and feel good about it, and don't ever apologize. That's the most important
thing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right, because it is what it is.
Yeah, and you
can also. You can use that price increase as an incentive for people to buy. I think if you let everyone know that the price increase is going to go into effect, sometimes that kind of gets people to get off, you know, their up off the chair and use their credit card to buy something. I think you can offer some time in advance where people could still buy your price, your art at the old price. You know, if it's effective June 1st and you tell them that in May, well, they've got, you know, 4 weeks to get going. And I think sometimes that's enough. You know, you always have to give reason for someone to do it right now. And maybe that's enough to really spur some sales. And besides, then everything that's left moves up in price and you're still in good shape.
Yeah. The other thing you can do is just raise them and don't make a big deal about it. I mean, no one says you have to announce a price increase. I mean, does Nordstrom's ever say, hey, we're raising all our prices? Or, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, you're allowed to do it.
No.
You don't have to mention it. He says.
Yeah, just do it. That's right.
Yeah.
So what about lowering prices? Because that's an option. I think you have to be very careful how you do it. And you should be creative. You know, you can always offer a discount without lowering the price on your art. And, you know, you might actually increase your sales if you do something like offer a discount on multiple purchases. You know, buy one, get the second. You know, we were talking about cleaning out, buy one, get one free. But you can say buy one and get the second at 25% off. I think, you know, the goal of every artist should be, if you're selling, to keep moving things out the door. And sometimes, if you've had stagnant sales, we've all looked around and said, oof, I need to do something. I've got too many that are waiting to find homes. This is a great way to do it and also kind of spur the market to move in your direction. I think you can also offer a special where if someone buys a painting at the retail price, maybe you will toss in free framing or shipping or maybe some additional merchandise. I mentioned before note cards. And I know if you watch the sales, you can get a pretty good deal on printing things like small books or calendars, you know, certainly prints of your work, whatever it is. I think you can be creative, but kind of package together a little buy now and give them something in addition. That kind of is a way of moving things along. What about?
No, you're right. And go ahead. You want to say something?
No, I was going to say, what about the short term?
Yeah, so short term, it's totally acceptable in our industry to host a sale or offer discounts. I mean, sometimes you want to move inventory. I mean, and, you know, a home art show or an art walk is a great place to do it. So short term sale is a brilliant idea. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand that you can do that. And as we mentioned you know, you don't have to obviously just offer a price discount. You can offer other incentives, which is cool.
Yeah. I think, again, I just want to toss in, be careful that you don't do a predictable annual sale at the same time every year, because as we mentioned before, if everybody knows you do a sale in November, they will wait. So a little spontaneity goes a long way.
Yeah, it really does. So what if you want to lower your prices long-term? I mean, this is tough, because we all think, if I'm lowering my prices, it means my art's not selling, my art's not good enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that lovely black hole that we let our imagination go down, which is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be that you have a lot of inventory and you've been painting like a crazy artist and you just have a lot of inventory. It could be that you made a mistake and your prices were too high. So all you need mm-hmm. to do is just one thing, and that is lower your prices.
Right.
Don't announce it. Don't make a big deal about it. Just make sure you publish your prices so that your collectors are aware of it. I mean, don't make it sound like you're desperate. Don't advertise a fire sale or anything like that. If someone asks,
right.
just say, you know, I am in this mode where I am painting so much that I have a lot of inventory. That is a positive thing. Only thing you should say when you explain it. Don't say anything like, well, I priced him too high, or their things just aren't selling. I mean, no, you can't
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
Talk about the fact that you have a ton of inventory.
Yeah. You know, I think there are ways. There are ways to do that. And the truth is, once you sort of just bite the bullet and get your prices to where they, quote unquote, should be, I think even if that means going down, I think in the end it'll just benefit you. You know, you'll have more sales, and that's what it's all about. The last question we have here is it okay to offer a sale price on inventory that isn't selling? And, you know, the answer is, of course it is. I mean, retailers do this mm-hmm. all the time, and they usually call it a loss leader. You know, they advertise large discounts on items so that they can attract buyers, and then they give them an option to buy the discounted one, you know, or we have these lovely ones over here that are at the regular price. The same
right.
thing with your art. I would suggest one way that I know I would be comfortable doing this is if you had sort of a particular series, or maybe you did, you know, maybe you normally work larger and you've done these, you know, smaller paintings. You know, there's a way of sort of lowering your prices on those, but then having everyone who's come to see them, and by come to see them, I'm particularly thinking, you know, online,
mm-hmm.
then they can also see your regularly priced items right beside it. What a great way to get more sort of eyeballs on what it is you've got.
Right.
I think even if you give away your, you know, let's call it the extra inventory, the ones that aren't moving, maybe you can have giveaways to email subscribers. You know, anytime you can offer an incentive to a potential buyer, it will, I think, benefit you more. You know, incentivizing them is better than giving them a huge discount. I think you have to be careful with a huge discount that it doesn't look like you're desperate. I think it's much better to sort of frame it up as a reward for something that, you know, in particular the email subscribers. I think we know that there's real value in that as an artist. And why not use your, you know, for whatever reason it isn't moving, why not use that to kind of bring more people into the fold to see the stuff
mm-hmm.
that you're going to be creating? Yeah, it's a win-win.
That made me think of something, and that is, and we kind
of
alluded to this, but not much. And that is the fact that there are all different kinds of buyers out there for your art. And what I mean by that is they have different price points. You have the kid in college who wants art for the walls.
Yep.
You have the person who has their first apartment. You have the couple who just got married with their first home. You have the people who collect art. And then you have the people who have art as an investment. And you don't want to just appeal to one group. And as your art career grows, you have a tendency to kind of shift toward the more advanced buyer. But don't forget
mm-hmm.
that all those buyers are out there. And you need to think about having multiple products and Margaret, you alluded a little bit to this, multiple products so people can kind of get used to your art. And I think back at some of the very early paintings that I did that I probably sold for, $75, and I cringe, and I think, wait a minute, that person bought that for a great price. They love the art when they bought it. Why would I cringe? That's a great thing.
Right.
And so don't forget that having prints or having other things are ways to get people to kind of start collecting what you do, but maybe not at the investment price of a painting for $2,500. And it's a gradual process. So if you are just starting out, it's okay to offer other ways for people to collect your art. That's not an actual finished, framed, classic painting.
So true.
So,
and
yeah.
those people who buy the print sometimes live with that, and they look at it every day and they say things like, someday I'm going to buy a painting of his or hers. And, that audience can really grow with you. So for sure. And that's another value of having, their email address, being able to sort of stay with them, tap them once a year or more, and just show them what's available. You never know when they're going to finally be ready. But how nice.
Yeah. I sense from the people that send us their, can you do a show on pricing? Can you do a show on pricing? I sense a little bit of frantic panic about pricing. And I hope this show kind of gave everyone that calming effect that just pick a price and go with it and see how it goes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I think you have to do that, because really you have to focus more on getting more people to see your art. Because if you're not selling, it's probably not the price. It's probably that not enough eyeballs are seeing it. So don't get too caught up on pricing. But you just have to stop, give a little reality check, and say, oh, yeah, that's good. That works.
And
don't
keep painting.
Out. Yeah,
that's
of course.
Keep painting. If you don't have a good variety and a lot of paintings ready to sort of show during that open studio or whatever, then you need to be painting more. And, I know it's a luxury, and I know that there's a reality of everyday living and the cost of living, but, figure it out and make sure that you're growing with your audience, because, I think they'll be there when you're ready to sell it to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm firmly convinced that the buyers are there. I think that's what
me
I've
too.
Learned most over
oh,
the
absolutely.
Last 8 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just need
so much fun.
Your,
so
that's what it's all about. Thank you, Margaret. That was a great show.
Well, thank you. I'm going right back into the studio now to go make some more odd-shaped paintings.
Stop it.
Let's see what I can cook up now. All right. Well, Leslie,
do you sell your art
framed
or not framed?
Both.
Do you sell your art framed or not framed? Framed?
Both. No, I do it both ways.
Isn't it a lot more expensive to frame an odd-shaped canvas?
It depends on your relationship with the framer.
Okay. That's true.
And often, if it's a really odd size, no, I can't say often. I really decide whether or not to frame based on where the painting is going. If I'm submitting it to a show, I try to have it framed.
Right.
And if I'm using a really deep stretcher, a 2-inch, then I'm comfortable not framing it.
Exactly.
So it's kind of a decision I make when I frame it or when
Good
I decide
you.
Where it's going to hang.
I have 5 paintings I need to do for the Waco house.
What
and they're all really big. Because I have 11-foot ceilings.
Oh.
They're all really big.
Well, that's a fun project. And
isn't
you've
it?
Got
and now
weather, so
here's the problem. I can't decide if I should paint them here or there. Because I don't want to roll them up and have them stretched there. You know what I mean? So,
paint
I don't know.
Here. Paint them
and
here.
Then ship them? It's going to cost me a fortune. I don't
How
know
How long
to
would it take you to drive?
Okay, so that's the other thing. I really keep thinking I'm going to drive, and if I drive, I'm going to have pull a trailer or something. I don't know. I got to figure it out. It's really, you can do it in 2 days, 12 hours each day. It would probably be the worst 24 hours of my life, but yeah.
You'll have so much fun painting in your studio. You'll get the,
I agree.
You'll be more you. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well,
because I want
week,
them on
the check on your progress.
Oh yeah, I
you
know.
Want
it's
them
pretty
where?
Fun. It's pretty fun. So. Yeah.
And you're going to
okay.
want them photographed. We need to talk about this because if you're going to photograph them before you hang them,
mm-hmm.
you
of
know,
course.
If you want to get some good images, you need them in your studio.
I do. Yes. So.
All right. Happy painting.
Thank you. Thanks for a great show.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.